Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Of mind power. This is Donna Sebo. And today, my goodness, we're just a few days away from a brand new year. I think our guest today, John Welshens, is going to be able to share with us some wonderful, wonderful insights that, well, will help us move in to that space of newness, if you will call it that, that we're going to be experiencing, and empower us in a way that's going to make us alert of mindfulness on more than one level. I want to welcome you, John. John Welshens, your book, One Soul, One Love, One Heart. Thank you for being with me today.
Well, thank you, Donna. Thanks for inviting me. It's great to be with you.
Now, you were supposed to be in New Jersey, but you're one of those people who, because of all the blizzard activity, you're still in California.
I'm stuck in Southern California.
Where the sun is shining
having
and
a wonderful
blizzards
time.
Are blowing. Yes, that's a great thing.
Well, actually, it's been rainy today, but it'll clear up soon, I'm sure.
Oh, yes, it will. John, you're a man of tremendous educational background. You have, you know, studied religion from all over the world. In fact, you've got a Master of Arts degree in the history of religions from Florida State University. You've traveled quite a bit, extensively in India, and you've been a counselor that has had a wonderful association with a man that all of us know about, Ram Dass and Stephen Levine.
Mm-hmm.
And you also went through some training with Dr. Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, and you do workshops and lectures, and there's just a never-ending, ongoing involvement in your life. And when I got your book, and I started reading the very first page of the very first chapter, you started off with a story about an accomplished yogi.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, this is a great way to introduce your book. Because here's a guy who went through all of the trainings and disciplines and was acknowledged for being so wonderfully talented and gifted, and then he goes down the mountain after 35 years, basically, of isolation, goes down the mountain, and he gets bumped by a stranger, and he loses it.
He loses it, yep.
He loses it.
Yep. Uh-huh.
And the question was posed, and I really like this. What did the yogi's years of practice really accomplish? Good
right.
question.
Good
Very
question.
Good question. Did you have an answer for that one?
Well, I think that the point of the story, obviously, is that that it's possible to get so wrapped up in a certain kind of spiritual discipline that essentially removes you from the world and gets you just focused on your own being. And that's useful at a certain point, but and maybe at several certain points throughout one's life. But the real challenge then, or the real test of the teachings, is what happens when you come back into the marketplace? You know, what happens when you come back and you have to deal with people, you know, it's wonderful to feel all loving and connected to the one light that we all are connected to, in an abstract, removed, isolated setting, but to actually come down and confront the challenge of dealing with this world that we live in, and still try to bring that consciousness into everyday life. That's the real challenge, and that's really what One Soul, One Love, One Heart is about.
In this first chapter, you bring out so many different points that I would like my audience to be aware of. One is that you say, despite all of our efforts to bring more peace into the world, the very same conditioned hostility that brought us to the brink of destroying our planet back in the 50s and 60s still exists today, even at the most rudimentary levels of human interaction. And you bring the point that certain faith traditions, and it's across the globe, it's not one country, it's across
right.
the globe,
right.
that this sense of separateness, you know, it's either my way or the highway, and
mm-hmm.
if you don't believe my way, then, you know, you've got to either pay your way through whatever, or you're going to have to be totally, you know, eliminated. I mean, I've seen this, you study history.
Right.
And history has a plethora of this.
Right.
And it can come through, you know, religions. It can come through organizations of different types. I just was listening to something. It just boggled my mind. Here in the United States, how the Ku Klux Klan, in the 20s, there were over 4 million people that belonged to it. Because
isn't that amazing?
Certainly, and mm-hmm. I just went, what? How mm-hmm. could, and over 500,000 of these mm-hmm. were women, which boggled
yeah.
my mind. Now,
yeah.
you have to take into consideration that. But again, it's the ideology,
uh-huh.
the falseness.
Uh-huh.
And it's like, again, my way or no way.
Right.
And you talk about the patterns we have, where now we've got children, over 8 million of our children currently taking medications prescribed for a variety of psychological and emotional maladies.
Mm-hmm.
We're going into a pattern, and I think this one little section in that chapter that you said, and I'm going to read it verbatim, how we see ourselves determines how we react to the way other people see us. How we treat ourselves will determine how we react to the way others treat us. How we treat our planet will determine how our planet treats us. And in those few sentences, you have summarized something, and I brought up the other points. Just because it's so easy to say, nah, this stuff, you know, this maybe happened in the 50s and 60s, but it's not going to happen today. And I go, good Lord, if anybody studies history, it repeats itself over and over and over again. Every generation
right.
seems to have to learn it again. When you were putting this together, how did you feel when you were writing this information down? Did you feel like you were sort of suffocating as you were going through this quagmire?
Well, not really, but I think that, you know, what I really felt, Donna, was that I think we need to take a look at this, you know. I think we're so conditioned in today's society to just keep moving forward, to keep rolling. Everybody feels so stressed and so mm-hmm. busy and, you know, so distracted, really. Nobody has time to think about what kind of a society we're creating. And there's a story further in the book, which a lot of your listeners are probably familiar with, but it's about the frog in boiling water.
Mm-hmm.
And that it's really literally true that if you take a frog, a healthy, normal frog, and drop it into a pot of very hot water, it will immediately jump out because it understands that it's in an alien environment. It's in an unhealthy environment. But if you take that same frog and put it in a pot of room temperature water and then slowly heat it, you wind up with the frog just sitting in the water until it boils and the frog will die.
Mm-hmm.
And I was reflecting on that as I wrote One Soul, One Love, One Heart, and I was thinking, you know, that really seems to me to be analogous to the situation that our culture is in, that we are, you know, I'm really, what I'm trying to say in part in the book is the water's getting hot and a lot of people aren't noticing. You know, we're not paying attention to the way in which you know, the kinds of divisiveness and conflict and so on that have become so prevalent in our political situation, in our cultural value system. You know, we're really at a very intense period, and that doesn't mean it's wrong. You know, it's kind of challenging, and there's a
mm-hmm.
lot of, I think there's tremendous spiritual growth possible, but I do think that we have to look clearly at what's happening. We can't pretend it's not happening.
I agree, and you bring some points out also that, and I'll read them verbatim, you pay attention, you observe, you investigate, become familiar, recognize, focus. And lastly, there is a comment, turn towards difficulties, whatever
mm-hmm.
they may be in our individual perspectives, rather than away from them. And what you said a moment ago about go forward, go forward, go forward,
mm-hmm.
is so true.
Mm-hmm.
And not that progress or advancement is bad, but if you cannot stay still long enough to really see what's going on around you so that you can get your senses in their proper balance, you are literally going to be running blind.
Right, right.
And
yeah.
that is not good.
Yeah. Well, I think that there is a tendency to, since you mentioned Ram Dass, you know, there's a term he used to use that he referred to the fact that we sometimes up-level in a way that isn't really appropriate or healthy or spiritually realistic, meaning that we look at a situation and we say, well, yes, you know, I know that there's starvation and there's rape and murder and war and all of that, but we're all one and it's all light, and so I'm just going to focus on the positive. Well, that's great, except for the fact that that doesn't generally stop all of the negative stuff from happening. So what I'm suggesting really is a broader perspective in which we learn how to look clearly at exactly what's happening, not try to pretend that it's something other than it is, and from that perspective, draw it into our hearts, embrace the oneness in the world, and also simultaneously honor that there's an awful lot in the world and in our culture and in our family lives and in our personal lives that we could make better. But I don't think we can make it better by pretending that it isn't the way it is, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the real issue then is how do we convert it? How do we take the difficult interactions to come back to, you know, the main theme of the book, which is about our relationships, but of course it's relationships with everything. It isn't just relationships with other human beings. But let's look at relationship with other human beings. You know, how do I go from cultivating a place of inner peace and bliss and contentment, and then I turn around and there's that one person who just makes my skin crawl? You know, how do I, rather than saying, well, I'll just stay away from them, or I'll pretend they don't exist, maybe you can't do that. You know, maybe it's a coworker or a close family member. So how do you convert that difficult relationship into something that's spiritually growthful, at least for you and maybe even for the other person?
To illustrate that point, you have a marvelous, marvelous story about a friend that you were walking with in New York City during rush hour, and I know
oh,
New
yeah.
York City
mm-hmm.
well, and I could just play the whole thing out in my head,
uh-huh.
because New York City is just absolutely awesome to me. It is a phenomenal environment of so many variables. But
yeah.
share with us the story about the friend, because what you've just discussed, I think this story is absolutely awesome in illustrating your point about this guy and
uh-huh.
what he did with the guy that runs the magazine newspaper stand.
Right. Well, this happened about, almost 40 years ago when I was just starting out on the spiritual path. And I was walking with a friend of mine in New York City, coming home. I had met him at work, and we were on our way to his home to have dinner. And we stopped at a newspaper stand on the sidewalk. And we walked up to the newspaper stand, and the man inside the stand didn't look at us. And my friend told the man what he would like, you know, this newspaper and that magazine and a pack of chewing gum or whatever. And the man never looked at him. He just kind of grunted and slapped the stuff down on the counter. And then my friend said, well, how much will all that be? And the man told him the price. And my friend handed him the money. And he never made eye contact. He never, it was one of those situations which we've all had where we go into some place of business to give them money, basically, and they act like, you're an inconvenience, like
mm-hmm.
they would prefer that you hadn't come into their shop that day. Well, that's how this man was. He was just grumpy and unpleasant, and my friend just kept being nice to him, and he kept, you know, finally he slammed my friend's change down on the counter, and my friend said, thank you very much, and have a wonderful evening. Now, we walk away from the newspaper stand, and I turn to my friend, and I said, do you go to that stand often? And my friend said, every night. And I said, is that man always there? And he said, oh, yes, he owns the stand. I said, is he always that grumpy? My friend said, yes. And I said, and are you always nice to him? And he said, I try to be. And I said, how do you do that? And why do you do that? And my friend said, well, he said, I happen to know that his wife died last year, and he's grieving. And that's probably a large part of why he's so grouchy. And he said, I try to be nice to him because it's just more fun that way. And he said, after all, he said, why should I let him ruin my day? Why should I let his bad mood take me out of loving? He said, loving is just more fun. And I really got it in that moment, you know, that that we tend to be so reactive, that most of us in this culture have grown up feeling that love is more something we get from other people rather than something that we give or something that we are. And in the spiritual traditions that are most meaningful to me, love is who we are, and love is what the thing we call God is. And it's something that, if we'll tap into it, is infinite in its nature and its supply. It doesn't run out. But it does, or we can sense that it's run out, if we give love with expectation of reward. So that if I go up to some stranger in a magazine stand and he's grouchy to me, and I say, well, you know, I get grouchy with him because how can you treat me this way? I went into that interaction with an expectation that if I'm nice to him, he should be nice to me. Or if he's a shopkeeper, he should be nice to me. You know, but that's not the way it works. It's really, if you just give love because it's more fun to do that, and, you know, you recognize that the minute you say, for instance, if I give you a five and you give me a three back, well, the next time I'm going to give you a two. And if you don't give me a five, then I'm going to take my marbles and leave. Well, that's really conducting relationship as business. And that's really not how we get into the experience of divine love, which is the one we're really looking for. That's the thing that we sometimes refer to as unconditional love. And it's a pretty big concept, but it's also something that exists inside every one of us. Every one of us has the capacity for unconditional love. And if we focus on that, rather than how can I get what I want from this person by giving them love or being nice to them, that's a whole other thing, you know? So it was really an amazing insight. And I would hasten to add, Donna, that sometimes when I talk about these things and people first hear these concepts, they say, well, does that mean that I'm just supposed to accept abuse from people? And the answer is no. You know, being unconditionally loving doesn't mean that you allow yourself to be abused or taken advantage of. It simply means that you understand that we live in a universe in which people are disconnected and frightened and angry and sad and all kinds of things that keep them from responding to you the way you might like them to. That's their problem. If you take it on and get resentful and reactive about it, you make it your problem. So, you know, the quickest way to sort of summarize all of that is, for instance, I teach meditation sometimes in prisons. And I teach prisoners who are in prison for being convicted of murder. Now, I don't think that they should be let out of prison. I don't think loving them means that, because they've obviously shown that they're capable of harming other human beings. And so we as a society have to do something to eliminate their ability to do that. At the same time, I'd like to go give them some love and give them a tool for changing their life in prison, and maybe if they get out someday, they can really transform themselves. But most people, especially people in prison, they're not really experiencing love coming from many people. You know, prisons are full of anger and violence and so on. So I'm just trying to change the pattern there a little bit. But it doesn't mean that we just ignore what people do or what they have done or so on. So just just wanted to make that point.
Well, I think your friend, by interacting with this gentleman, and this is just my paradigm, is that he really was putting himself in the role of being the student to see what it was he could accomplish, even though he knew about this man's pain. There are plenty of other people on corners in New York City that he could have gone to.
Mm-hmm.
But he was doing it for himself as well.
Right. Exactly.
Because it was a discipline. It was a discipline saying, my eyes are open. I'm not sleeping. I'm aware. So I'm responsible for my actions and my behavior. Am I up to the job? And I really think that he's to be complimented on that because it's so easy to go the other way. And I bet you one day something happened where that man eventually turned and responded in a different way. But it's really hard. And lots of times you never know what somebody else has gone through. You just don't know. Now, that brings up something else that you bring out in your book. You talk about relationships, and you talk about taking people as they are.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we all know about the romantic Hollywood movies that somebody meets Miss Princess or Mr. Prince, and they live happily ever after. Well, that's not reality. We're human beings. We all have positives and negatives within ourselves. And you bring up a relationship and saying when you are with someone or you are, maybe you're already married, maybe you're in a relationship, the most corrosive ingredient is the belief that we can or should change our partners.
Mm.
That is so devastating, and yet that's something that we're indoctrinated with. I can't tell you how many clients I've seen through the years where they'll say, oh, well, you know what, it's because of the mother here, you know, the gal talking about her husband, or you have someone else saying, oh, but you know, this happened. I go, wait a minute, this is real. This is what's going on in their life. This is who they are. Take time, open your eyes to see what's really there, because it's not going to change after you get married.
Right.
It isn't going to change if you get married.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I always like to keep the door open for change, but not to expect it. You know, not to expect that. Because I think that, what you're touching on, Donna, is the biggest issue that I see, and you've seen, obviously, in couples coming together and saying, well, I know that he or she is nervous and neurotic and self-centered now, but my overwhelming love will change them.
I love that. Neurotic, self-serving. Oh, that's so good. Yes, I like that description. Okay.
So it's like you see it, but you say, no, the purity of my love will change it. Well, you know, don't be so sure. I mean, it's a nice in theory, but if you're entering into the relationship, I think you have to say, you know, I don't know if I told the story in One Soul, but I participated in a marriage many years ago where it was during the era when couples were first starting to write their own vows. And this couple was going to write their vows, but they couldn't figure out what they were going to be. So finally, finally they decide that they're going to have one vow, and that is, I take you as is.
I take you as is. That's interesting. I've never heard that in any vows at any ceremony I've ever performed.
No, it's very unusual.
So when this happened, how long did the marriage last?
Hello?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah,
you're joking there for a minute. That's okay. I hope you're getting a drink of water. That's
I'm just getting over the flu, so.
Oh, yeah.
Excuse me. Okay, but, so you were saying when this happens.
Yeah, no, when this happened, how long did the marriage last? Have you been able to find out?
Well, I didn't keep in touch with them, but it seemed to be going pretty well for the first few years, so.
Good.
I don't know.
Good. For those of you listening, we're talking with John Welshens, and he is someone that has walked a path that has enabled him to reach out to a lot of people. And his book, One Soul, One Love, One Heart, is really doing a good job. John, what are the five hindrances?
Ah, the five hindrances. Well, excuse me, they're taken from Buddhist thought, Buddhist philosophy. And the Buddha talked about the five hindrances as being the five tendencies of mind that keep us most effectively from our true nature or living in our highest being. And that means that from that perspective, who we truly are is love and peace and joy and happiness. And those things are all inside us. They're not things that we gather from outside us. They are states of consciousness within us. So the Buddha then laid out the five hindrances. He said, these are the five primary things that keep you from experiencing your inner light or your inner, your highest consciousness. So the first one is lust and greed. Now, that's interesting because he put them together. You know, he said it's not even two things. It's one thing, lust and greed. You know, it's really coming from a place of feeling that I need more. I need something from you. I have to take something from you. You have to give me something. Now that I applied to relationships in One Soul, One Love, One Heart, and I looked at how corrosive that is in relationship, because it really, both lust and greed are forcing us to objectify the person we're in relationship with. We see them as an object and something that from whom we need something, and they better be giving it to us or we're not going to be happy. So that's the first one. The second one, lust and greed. Excuse me, my voice is going again. Hatred and ill will, or anger. Mm-hmm. Now, that's obviously very prevalent in relationships. And again, to look at that and say, well, what is the source of that? Because what I've always been drawn to in the Buddhist teachings is that we're always looking for the root cause of things, like not just that I'm angry. You know, it's a different approach. Western psychology has taken the approach of saying, you know, well, we need to get people in touch with their anger and then they'll be happier. Well, you know, there's a problem with that because, you know, certainly suppressed or repressed anger isn't healthy. But on the other hand, a culture that's totally in touch with its anger is not a very happy culture. Everybody's barking at each other, and you know, and we see that a lot today. So I'm suggesting we take a look at the root causes, which are rooted in what are my expectations of this other person. You know, is it that they're doing something that makes me inherently angry, or is there something in me that is expecting them to be different than they are, and that's what's making me angry? So that's an interesting thing to look at. So lust and greed, hatred and ill will. The third one is agitation of mind, you know, and I think we see that very clearly in our culture as a whole right now. You know, my meditation classes that I teach back in New Jersey are, we can hardly make enough room for people these days because there are so many people who are so stressed. And if I go around the room and ask what's bringing them to want to learn meditation, most people will say, well, my mind is a mess, I'm anxious and agitated, and I can't sleep at night, and I can't stop thinking compulsively about thoughts that irritate me and things like that. So that's agitation. sloth and torpor is the fourth one, or laziness. And I think in this case, we could say that it's really the laziness that is also rampant in our culture that basically says, well, I want peace and I want happiness and I want fulfillment, but I'm really expecting it to just kind of fall in my lap. I don't want to acknowledge that I have to do something to get it, that I have to change something. You know, going back to my meditation classes, in the last few years I've noticed this profound change because I used to always recommend that people would learn to meditate, and then do it at least 20 minutes twice a day, maybe even as much as 40 or 50 minutes twice a day. Well, in recent years, people are looking at me like I'm crazy when I suggest that. And they say, well, how would I find that amount of time? I don't have time to do what I'm already doing. And you want me to add in another, you know, 40 minutes or 50 minutes or 60 minutes to my day? I just don't have time for it. And then I say, well, are you happy? And they say, no, I'm miserable. And I say, well, does it seem that maybe you might consider changing something about your life so that you can find happiness? Because there's no magic pill. I can't wave a wand over your head and make it happen. You got to change something in your own life to do it. So that is really addressing the issue of sloth and torpor. It's not total laziness. It's a kind of spiritual laziness. You know, it's like I don't want to do what I really need to do to find happiness in my life. Mm-hmm. And then the final one is doubt. That's the fifth hindrance. And to me, I think that that is really the doubt that these practices that we could do to find happiness, we may doubt that they're going to work. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if they don't work immediately, people are liable to say, well, maybe I better just take an antidepressant instead, you know. No, I think that if these practices, spiritual practices, meditation, yoga, contemplation, contemplative prayer, all of them, you have to have a certain level of faith that they're going to work in order to keep going. And sometimes that's a tricky intersection in the mind, but I've seen them work in miraculous circumstances in my own life and in other people's lives. So we can see how corrosive doubt is, and that's why Buddha listed that as, you know, that's something, if we have doubt in our minds that our spiritual techniques are going to work, that's going to undermine the ability for them to work. So it's useful to try to let that go.
John Welshen is my guest today. His book, One Soul, One Love, One Heart. If you wanted to start off the new year with a mindset that is going to enable you to have that sense of clarity that you would like to have, this book is delightful. And it's one especially that is eye-opening when it comes to relationships with people. Because the biggest thing is the relationship with yourself, but we do interact with others. That's just a part of life. So if you can have a good relationship with others, you'll have one also with yourself. So One Soul, One Love, One Heart. John, quickly, because I know we're out of time, what's your website that people can go to?
The website is onesoulonelove.com. And
onesoulonelove.com.
That has, we've got to update the schedule for 2011, so that'll be happening shortly. But this, my schedule is on there, and a lot of information about other things, and also people can contact me through that. And I'm also on Facebook, so if they want to connect with me on Facebook, I'd love that.
Wonderful. John Welshen, Happy New Year to you, and I'm so delighted that we were able to connect, even though the blizzards are going on the East Coast. Of course, I guess they're past now, but another storm is coming in, so I hope you get home in time.
Well, thank you so much, Donna. It's been wonderful being with you, and I apologize for my coughing.
Oh, that's all right. Hey, it's happened to me. I know. So you just take care. Get over that flu bug. I'm glad you're out of the woods with that. That's wonderful,
yeah.
And you have a wonderful, wonderful New Year. And a good, safe trip home.
Thank you, Donna. You too. Take good care.
Thank you. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a minute. Don't go away.
Hi, this is Rio. I'm the author of the cutting-edge book, Hooked on Raw. I want to give you and your loved ones the gift of optimum health. So when you order my book, Hooked on Raw, which has over 350 delicious, healthy recipes, I'll include my new DVD, What's Not Cooking in Rio's Kitchen, for a half price. Just go to my website, rawfoodinfo.com, and click on Holiday Special. That's rawfoodinfo.com. Click on Holiday Special.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Hi, this is Donna. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. Yes, I'll even give you insight into the upcoming year if you like. 888-815-9756. All I need from you when you call in at 888-815-9756 is your first name or your initial, and then I'll tell you, of course, I always like to know where you're calling from, too, but I'll tell you what I perceive about you and the upcoming year. Can you believe it? Gee whiz. Only 2 more days and we are in 2011. I'm telling you, they just seem to be buzzing along too quickly the last days of 2010. 888-815-9756 is the telephone number to call in if you would like for me to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. Don't forget, January the 3rd is the cutoff day for the stories of the paranormal experiences you may have had. And I've gotten so many wonderful stories, I probably will be wanting some more from you later on. But I really would appreciate it if you could get it off to me in an email. Send it to Donna at DelphiInternational.com. That's Donna at Delphi, D-E-L-P-H-I, International.com. And that will be just super. And then we're going to be submitting material to some publishing facilities and see who will want to have the book material. So I'm looking forward to it. And the reason I wanted to put the book together, and I'll have a lot of my own personal experiences in there, because I think the more we can talk openly about what is deemed paranormal, the more we'll understand that it really is actually quite normal. And we have all of these various experiences that happen to us, and when we can be open and free about discussing them and telling people about them, it does raise new questions, perhaps, but it also makes you feel good, because if you've had some experiences that you have not been able to talk to anybody about, sometimes when you read about them or what other people have gone through, it's a big aha for you. I know when I first started in the work of mind, I was thrilled to find that there were other people that had had experiences similar to mine that I could talk to about it. And I encountered a young couple not too long ago that they said they were so curious about so many things and they couldn't talk about some of the experiences that they had had. And they were so relieved to be able to be in my company because I didn't make fun of them. And I said, gee whiz, do you understand what this is? They'd say, no, well, let me share what I know with you. And then you can come to your own conclusions. And my goodness, we talked for hours. Why? Because there was that space of communication, a lack of fear, a willingness on my part to listen. And then also they were open to trying to understand what had been happening in their life experience. So that's why I'm interested in your story, because your story could touch somebody else in a way that gives them freedom and liberation from fear and apprehension of the unknown. Wally Amos, and again, give me a call if you want to chat, 888-815-9756. Wally Amos is a wonderful man. I met him many, many years ago, and I always appreciate what this man has gone through in his life and how he has weathered all the challenges of losing a business, his own business name, all of the things that happened to him and how he managed to ride the currents of change that were forced upon him. And he always seems to have something to share. And this is something that he wrote just recently that I thought I would bring forth in the program today. He said, there's a quote, every no gets you closer to a yes. Let me repeat that. Every no gets you closer to a yes. He said, sometimes life is a series of no's. You can ask people in the insurance business, any salesperson, basically, that they will tell you that in order to succeed, you must be prepared to go through a lot of no's that you're going to be getting. You're going to get more no's than yeses. In fact, and I had this experience once where I had been doing some kind of work and I'd been getting so many no's, and all of a sudden somebody said, sure. And I go, excuse me. I was so unprepared for the yes when it came. I just didn't know what to do. So this is what Wally is talking about. He said he'd like to suggest a great training manual to prepare you from the no's. And he said, you're going to meet a lot of them as you're working towards your own, well, your own desire for success, whatever that might be. You're not going to believe the book he is going to recommend. Yes, and I know so many of you, if you don't laugh like I did, you will. Green Eggs and Ham, that's right, good old Dr. Seuss. Go get Green Eggs and Ham. He said he keeps reading that book. He feels like he's read it literally hundreds of times. And he said, if you're in sales, and all of us are salespeople at one time or another, we all have to sell ourselves if we're going out for a job interview or anything. And he said, this book has just been so inspiring to him. He said, Sam I Am, which is one of the characters of the book, is not the slightest bit fazed by the constant series of no's that he gets. He simply offers the same item in a different package, with a boat, with a goat, with a box, with a fox, etc. When you are doing sales, when you're trying to sell yourself, when you're just being yourself, you won't ever hear a no. You'll listen to the tone of voice and you'll notice mannerisms. And then make a different presentation with the same item. A good salesperson is focused on selling, not on not selling. Now, you said there's a second character in the book who represents the customer. He's determined not to taste the green eggs and ham. He says, no, 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 even though he's never tasted them before. He's determined that he isn't going to have a brand new experience. Well, Sam I Am wins a sale because of persistence. The customer finally decides to test the product just to get rid of the salesperson. Guess what? He likes green eggs and ham. Yes. The customer ended up loving the product. So it's important not to get stuck on no. The only way to yes is to be open-minded. And that's in so many ways in life. Yes is always a win-win. And Wally, who is also the author of children's books, he said, his foundation, which he established, what's called Read It Loud Foundation, he said it's so important that children are read to at least 10 minutes a day from birth, until they're 6 years old where they can read for themselves. He said reading to your children will help prepare them to excel in life, in whatever career they may choose, and they're going to have a lot of fun in the process. He said, remember to give your children the gifts of love, language, imagination, and a promising future. Read to them. Wally is a very wise man, and I think that the message he gives is such a significant one. You need to remember, there's no such thing as an ideal life. We're here in this school of experience to grow to our greatest potential. And it can be an exciting adventure, or you can feel like you're in a prison. Like Wally said, keep persisting. Go after what it is you really want. You may have to change how you present what you've got, but you'll win. And above all, get Green Eggs and Ham by Dr. Seuss. Very inspiring. If it inspires Wally, I'm sure it can inspire the rest of us. This is Donna. We're going to take a break. And by the way, if you want to come back and chat with me, you can at 888-815-9756. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Rio, host of the Hooked on Raw radio show on rawenergyradio.com. If you're interested in the raw and living food lifestyle, along with the real story of what's happening to our health freedoms, and you don't mind a little controversy, listen to my radio show and podcasts on rawenergyradio.com. Each week, we interview guests and cover topics you won't hear on mainstream radio. Get informed, healthy, and involved. RawEnergyRadio.com.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Sebo. That's right. Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Sebo's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272. Tacoma, Washington, 98497. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Sebo's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Sebo and illustrated by Ed Ged Rose. Buy it today, 800-872-8852.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604 or outside of Pierce County, 800-872-8852.
Hi, this is Donna. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat, 888-815-9756. Tomorrow, we're going to be talking about energy healing. Stephanie Edeldinghoff is going to be my guest. I've known Stephanie, and when she was in my woman's forum at the Northwest Women's Show, which comes up at the beginning of March every year, she was one of the spokespersons in my women's forum, and it was just delightful. She's just a wonderful person. So I'm finally getting her on the show because energy work is her passion, and that's what she does. And she studied under some wonderful people, and she's absolutely delightful. So if this is an area of interest to you, you can do this with yourself, and I think you will be very pleased with the results. So Stephanie's going to be with us tomorrow. And then I have a wonderful guy on New Year's Eve Day. Michael Cremo. Now, Michael wrote a book called The Forbidden Archaeologist. Well, he's put out a book that at this time has articles that he's written about various aspects of history. But this is a man that has studied archaeology and has found out about ancient artifacts, all kinds of things. This is a terrific person, and we're going to have an interesting show. So I hope you can join us on Friday. And there's just so many wonderful people, and wow, have we got a lineup for January. Woo, that's going to be going up pretty soon, too. So I hope that you'll be able to join us, and the Donna Sebo Show is going to be just bringing on more and more people. You know, I'm going into my ninth year with my daily show, and it is always a joy to me to interact with so many talented people from all over the world. Each of them bring in to our environment their bit of knowledge, information, understanding, allowing us to educate ourselves, be informed individuals. And I think that that is what gives us the opportunity to make our world better than what we ever thought they could be. You know, when you're able to expand your thinking and your understanding, and you're able to look at things from different angles, you really can be quite an empowered person. I had a conversation the other day with someone who said they were getting so frustrated with the fact that whenever you will go to a party or a gathering, very few people really communicate. And there was a conversation that was going on, and this individual was sitting just listening to what was being said because they didn't have any knowledge about it. It happened to be about sports and sports contracts. And there was all of this exchange of words that was going on among the individuals that were discussing them. And someone turned to our friend and asked him, gee whiz, what's your opinion about this? Well, our friend said, I really don't have an opinion. I don't know anything about this subject. I'm listening to you because I'm intrigued with the conversation. And this person said to them, well, of course you have an opinion. And our friend said, no, I really don't. I have never been involved with any kind of contract related to sports. I have no idea what anybody's ever done. I've never seen a contract. I've never been involved in sports. So I really can't give you an opinion. And the individual said to this person, oh, of course you have an opinion. And he finally looked at this person. He said, excuse me, how can I have an opinion if I don't know anything about the subject? And he said what was very disturbing to him is that these people were talking, and he realized they honestly didn't know what they were talking about. So it's important, if you don't know, to do like our friend did and say, I don't know. It's okay that you don't know. The one thing that we must be honest enough about is to acknowledge we may not have an understanding of something. And if somebody says, gee whiz, you're asking stupid questions, just look at them and say, well, if they think my questions are stupid because I don't know anything about something, what does that tell me about that person that thinks that I might be stupid? It means that they don't really know what they know, because someone who is knowledgeable doesn't hesitate to explain what maybe you as an individual might not understand. So just be aware. You have a right to grow and to expand your mind. You have a right to question supposed authorities. You have a right to look at things from different angles. There's nothing wrong with that. It doesn't mean you're weird. Well, you might be in the minds of some people because they don't want to look at things with different opinions and attitudes. But if you don't question, you get stuck in somebody else's paradigm too many times. And you don't let people blame you for stuff that you're not responsible for. Put it back in their lap. I just love it when somebody says, it's all your fault. If it weren't for you, I wouldn't have done such and such and so and so. Boy, did I hear a lot of that during the years. Let me tell you, all you have to do is say, no, it's not my fault. I wasn't involved in your decision making. You made the choice. Kids are really good at tossing this kind of stuff back, but I know a lot of adults that are very much like kids. The key is you stand up. Don't be afraid to question. Don't be afraid to learn. Don't be afraid to acknowledge what you don't know. It's okay. You're never going to know everything. And anybody that says that they do, believe me, they don't know what they're talking about. I find every day there's something new to learn, something wonderful, and sometimes some things are pretty distressing when you learn them. But that's life. That's the way it is. Remember always, you're the master of your fate, and you are the captain of your soul. Don't ever forget that. You belong to yourself first, foremost, and always. And then when you are able to be honest and true with yourself, you'll have nothing but the best to give back into life, because you will have met your highest standard. This is Donna Sebo. We'll be back here tomorrow, same time, same place, learning about energy healing. I hope you'll be able to join me and tell your friends. Talk to you tomorrow. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.